If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We had this concept going, like letting go of yes, right? Like when you have this need for someone to say yes, like your whole world's going to fall apart if they don't fund you, right? So you're heavily leaning on them. When you let that go, it changes the way you communicate. It changes that feeling of need. So I think that's a lot of real estate people are like, well, if I'm not going to get it, then you're going to, you know, and there's like this anxiety versus like, hey, it's a cool opportunity. If you don't want it, no big deal.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Tim Cooley is the author of the number one best-selling book on raising capital, The Pitch Deck Book, How to Present Your Business and Secure Investors. He is the executive director for Park City Angels and a partner at ViaCap. He has worked with hundreds of early stage companies in marketing, sales, product development, and fundraising. The companies he has worked with have raised more than $200 million in seed and Series A funding. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh man, the pleasure's mine. The pleasure's mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, totally. So let's go back a little bit. I joined the Marine Corps a little bit after high school, went down that path. I used to build jet engines, ended up in sports medicine somehow, didn't really like it. And I was like, you know what, maybe I can do something. Started a company. It was a health and wellness platform similar to what Peloton is today. Mm. Then the technology wasn't available to do that. So I went out and, you know, thought I could conquer the world through Google searching, tried to raise capital, didn't work. Ended up growing that company just organically. I sold it off a couple of years later. Tried to start a second company, tried to raise capital, didn't work. So I was like, you know what? I don't have any idea why I'm not raising capital. My idea, just like everybody else's, is brilliant. And so I went back to school, got my MBA. And when I was there, I got involved with a seed program. So early stage funding for student startups, like on average, we were giving out $1,000 to get started. So super fun. But I got in the world of presenting a business. I was the one actually making the rules and still couldn't get funded. So it was very weird. I couldn't understand what was happening. And so fast forward a few years, I basically built an accelerator from the ground up, and then I got involved with Park City Angels. So I got to be on both sides of, you know, helping people present and then watching what was happening on the other side of funding. And so learned a lot and then ended up writing a book about it so that I could help other people navigate what I clearly sucked at.
So what you said, you work with Park City Angels. What does Park City Angels do?
Yeah, so Park City Angels is a local angel investment, so early stage investment group. We have about 55 active members who invest by themselves into companies. So my role is to screen out roughly about 100 companies a month, and I filter those down to about five that we take a look at every month.
Okay. And so then you were working. So how did you get involved with Park City Angels?
Yeah. So, networking is huge. When I was in my MBA program, I met one of the guys who started the group, and he is a military guy. He was in the Army, and I being in the Marine Corps, you know, you got a brotherhood there. So he gave me an opportunity and just rolled with it.
Okay. So you were working Park City Angels. And then at the same time, you were on the accelerator side, teaching people how to put their pitches together.
Yep.
That's cool. Cause then you get to see why people are kicking deals out and saying, hey, you know, this doesn't work. You know, how often did you see a really good deal just presented terribly?
Oh, way more often than they should have. So let's just say I saw 100 deals in person that they were actually they got to pitch to the group. I bet 10% of those were actually really good ideas, good companies. Like I knew more about the people than the group might have at the time. And when they presented, it was weird. Like I remember one story, this company, it was a female founder. The lady had made, she grew a blog from 0 to $2 million a year in sales.
Wow.
If you've ever run a blog, you know that's very, very difficult. And so anyway, so she grew this blog. It was huge. She was taking what she learned from the blog and then making a product around it. And so I was like, oh my gosh, you're so amazing. And she never mentioned that she grew this other company to $2 million in sales. And she was like, oh, I didn't think it was important. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, what? You're amazing. Like, you got to tell people how amazing you are. So yeah, so that was a couple, one of them, for example, but it happens more often than you think.
How often do you see good ideas or mediocre ideas get funded that were just pitched really well?
Probably equally.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And the hard ones are the ones where, actually, I would say maybe a little bit less, but they make it a lot further down the path of funding. Whereas, like, if you don't present well, you just don't make it to what's called due diligence, the next phase where the investors take a deeper dive. But yeah, so the people who present really well typically will make it to due diligence. And it's like this heartstrings, right? The investors are like, man, I just can't do it. I don't know why I can't fund it. But and you just find out it's just not that great of an idea.
Right. That's interesting. So as people go out as real estate investors, as we go out and pitch, like what are some of the things that you see us doing wrong that we could be doing better?
So a lot of times real estate investors don't present to people who invest in real estate. I know everyone's always trying to expand their portfolio, but a lot of times my background is in startup companies, right? I do have a house, I rent it out, you know, that kind of stuff. So I would be much more likely to invest in real estate because I already have a rental property.
Right.
And I'm like, well, shoot, I don't want to put the entire investment up myself, you know? So I'm already a step closer than a lot of people who are like, dude, I don't know anything about real estate. I barely own the home that I'm in. You know, like it's just not a world that I'm comfortable in. And I think that's what a lot of people, especially in real estate, they're like, yeah, but you can make all the money. It's like, yeah, but like, how do you get me started with where I feel like there's very little risk, you know? And most people just push too hard.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's a tough challenge, I would think, to overcome. You know, because obviously for us, a lot of the people that we are pitching to, you know, they're passive limited partners in these deals. Yep. They're not vetting apartment complexes, self-storage units. I mean, this is not stuff they see every day, but yet those are we need those passive investors because I don't need active investors, right? I mean, if they bring capital to the deal, fine, but I really don't need more active investors. I need passive investors. So how do we communicate more efficiently with people that maybe aren't necessarily in our space?
Yeah. So I think what you have to do is go the like diversification route in a lot of cases. Like, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. Like, just like, I hate the word, just trust me. Right. But like, it's, you know, it's almost like, look, here's the deal. If it doesn't work for you, that's fine. Like, and I'm going to walk away. Right. But like, I'd love to show you a different one in the future if that's cool. And I think that those are those ways of creating relationship with somebody. Somebody told me this one day. So I wasn't in sales. I hadn't been sales my entire career. I didn't have to. And my buddy was growing a company. I was like, dude, let me be your sales guy. Like, it's just something, like, I don't have that skill set. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, sure. And we had this concept going, like, letting go of yes, right? Like, when you have this need for someone to say yes, like, your whole world's going to fall apart if they don't fund you, right? So you're heavily leaning on them. When you let that go, it changes the way you communicate. It changes that feeling of need. So I think that's a lot of real estate people are like, well, if I'm not going to get it, then you're going to, you know, and there's like this anxiety versus like, hey, it's a cool opportunity. If you don't want it, no big deal.
Right.
You know, and I think that changes a lot. Anyways, and I think that also helps build that relationship. You're like, well, hey, I'll show you the next one if that's cool. And you're like, yeah, keep me in the loop.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, now this person who is definitely a hard no sees 10 deals and what you've been able to do over the last however long. And all of a sudden they're like, huh? You know, can I give you like $10,000? What can you do with that? And you're like, sure. You know, whatever.
Right. That's interesting. When you guys are looking at deals now, like, what's the average size of a startup that you guys are funding?
So in the stage that we're at, so there's a couple different stages. There's pre-seed ideas, which basically means it's an idea on paper. Like, you haven't done much with it.
Okay.
Seed stage deals means you've kind of built something and you might be selling it or you're really close to selling it. And then I call it seed plus, where you're building it and you're selling it and, you know, you might not be profitable yet, but those kind of like the stages. If you're in the seed stage, you're typically raising around maybe $1 million, $1.5 million. And if you're in that seed plus, you're probably around like $2.5 million. So that's really, you know, anywhere from maybe like 250,000 to about $2.5 million.
I gotcha. And what are some of the things that you guys are seeing across your desk right now that are getting funded?
You know, a lot of stuff in the fintech space. So finance, software, you know, anything really. We see a lot of crypto type businesses. They're fading down, but I think with the launch of Coinbase's IPO and, you know, what's happening with Bitcoin, we'll probably see a resurgence there. There was a company that's in Utah that just raised $100 million, basically being like a TurboTax type company of Bitcoin. So no one knows where that's going to go yet. So I think that that's a really interesting one. Still a ton with ads. I think that, you know, we're seeing a big change in the way the ads are going to be displayed over the next probably 10 years with Facebook and Google and everybody getting in trouble. We'll see where that goes. But I think there's going to be some unique things that are going to happen in the ad space as well.
That's really cool. I'd love to talk about your book a little bit. What would you say are maybe the top two or three things that you'll teach people to do inside of your book?
Yeah, so the big one I try and show people is how to present the problem statement of the company. A lot of times, the only way you can have a business is if someone has a problem worth paying for.
Sure.
And a lot of times we confuse that with the solution. So for example, I'll use real estate for example. It's like, hey, I'm going to make you rich. Right. And you're like, well, what's the problem? And you're like, well, you know, you don't have as much money as you want. And you're like, well, that everybody has that problem. And then that's why people lean on it. But if you go like, well, hey, look, so Salt Lake City has, you know, 50,000 homes that they're under. Right. So they're below. Right. So we actually need more housing than that's happening in the city. You're like, I have a real estate venture that's going to bring in an extra 5,000 units. Right. Okay. So you're 50,000 short and you need 5,000 more. Yeah. That's a pretty solid investment, right? Like, because again, it's just, it's a numbers game, right? You need them. They don't exist. So you look at same thing in Phoenix. It can't grow fast enough right now. So these cities where the population is growing faster than they can keep up are incredibly awesome real estate, right? Because again, it's a problem statement versus like, hey, do you want to build a building? You know, you're going to make $90 billion. And you're like, sure I am. Right. Like, so when you present the opportunity from this problem solution point of view, it really clarifies like, okay, yeah, I can see why a 5,000 unit place is so necessary. Or you say like, here's an opportunity type of presentation. So you mentioned storage units earlier, right? Storage units sit at 97% occupancy, right? Like they're just full. All of them are full. So right. We need more of them.
Right.
Right. You know? So it's like, yeah, it's going to cost $5 million to build, but like we need more of them. People want them. And so like, and a lot of people are just like, well, look how much money you're going to make. And I think that that's a huge problem in the real estate capital raise world.
Right. So spend more time focusing on the problem we're solving in the market and not necessarily the problem we're solving for the potential investor.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. And so then what do you see on the solution side? Like how are those getting mispitched?
So I think the solution, everybody knows what a house and an apartment is. It's not getting creative there. What's getting gets creative for the real estate side is the way that returns are done. So I love these new, like, I'm going to call them crowdfunding platforms, but the real estate crowdfunding platforms, there's one I'm looking at right now that has a property that's opening up in Park City. So if you know where you live and what's happening there, so this is what happened. So Park City, Utah saw a 100% increase in, what's it called? Real estate, like people buying houses over the pandemic.
Transaction volume.
Yeah, so transaction volume. So it went up huge, right? So you're like, okay, if I know that, and now I know that they're going to build an apartment complex or a studio or a housing unit or whatever, you're like, well, shoot, they don't have enough inventory, right?
Right.
So now if you were to say, hey, Tim, I have an opportunity in Alabama. I'm like, I know nothing about Alabama.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, doesn't matter if it's a great opportunity. I don't know anything about them.
Right.
So I think that that's the unique thing. And so the solution is good, but you're like, hey, look, you can get involved for $500. Like, do that. That's a really good solution for me as an investor. Or, you know, I just think those are the things that are unique now. We have different ways of paying the person back. We have unique ways of just doing a lot of different deals.
And do you see when those returns are spelled out to the investor that they're too confusing? Do they need to be clarified?
Yeah, I think that they get to be too confusing, right? It's like, well, if you do this and you carry the one and then, you know, and your dog runs by and you're like, wait, what? You're like, hey, look, if I put in $500, when do I get to see my money back? You know, like the first paychecks in 20 years. And you're like, okay, cool. You know, do I want to wait that long? Is that what the kind of thing that I'm looking for? And then it's like, well, how about we do that? You know, in the terms, if you can just simplify that, are huge. This is what I tell people too. So in their presentation, a lot of people want to put a spreadsheet of their like finances, basically like a pro forma.
Right.
I don't want to read that.
Right.
Right. Not today, at least. I will eventually, but not today. Like today, I just kind of want to get an idea of what you're doing, you know, what the opportunity looks like. Like keep the pro forma. Just tell me how much I need to invest and how much of money I can get back in what time frame.
Right. And I think that's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. What else?
So that's probably number two. Let's see, from a funding point of view, the other one is team, who you're working with. I think it's one of the most not necessary slides, but it can also ruin what you're up to. So if you're missing key components on the team, right? So let's say, for example, I went into the real estate business, but I don't have a background in finance. You know, like if I don't have somebody who understands the math and the numbers on my team, it's really going to be hurtful. And so you have to convince the person that A, you're able to recruit the right team members and have everybody in place if I'm going to trust what you're up to.
Do you think, I mean, because, you know, there's people that we practically need on retainer, our attorneys and our CPAs and people like that. Are those people that we should be listing as our team members? I mean, or is that just, you know, look like fluff on some of those presentations?
I think it's a good, so in like my world, you have an advisory panel, right? The advisory panel is very similar to what you're just like. I would say this is your service provider panel, because let's be honest, you can just go get a new CPA. Like it's not a huge hurdle to climb. There's millions of them.
Right.
I would say it's finding the people who are the hurdles to climb, right? Like who has experience raising capital on your team?
Right.
Experience paying back the investors. Like those are the ones that I'm more interested in than it is, yeah, like a CPA or, you know, like a lending partner or a real estate agent, right? Like I want to know the hard people to get to find.
Right. So you're suggesting that there needs to be, you know, not necessarily the service provider panel, but more of the advisory panel. Like who is it? And even if these people aren't necessarily, you know, on your payroll, but they are advisors to you. I mean, those are important people to include, no?
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting. What else in your book? Like, is there other key takeaways that you said, hey, this is something that we should really be focusing on?
Yeah. So this problem solution thing is a really big one. Understanding your numbers and presenting them in that way. In my world, there's lots of no slides, right? Like there's slides that you just should not do. So a couple of them are don't do an agenda. Like we're going to talk about these five things. Like don't do that. That's high school. That's college presenting. You don't need to do that. Another one is like a lot of people want to make their slides cute and like have like the, you know, like the word like pop up or like the screen fade to the next one or something like that. Like don't do any of that. It's not necessary. Like we're not magicians, right? Like just show what you need to show. Let me read it. I'm going to read at the same time that you're presenting. And with that, like a lot of people feel like if they over explain that that's better. In fact, in our world, less is more. What I want you to do is ask me a million questions. Right. Like I want you to be like, oh my gosh. So tell me a little bit more about why you want to do Park City? Like why Utah? Like you said 50,000 units, but like give me a little, why is that? You know, like I want to be asking questions. So if you're getting a ton of questions, usually that's a good sign. And so what you want to do is release the number of words. So I looked at a deck, it's actually a real estate deck recently, and I bet each slide had 100 words on it. And I'm like, man, first of all, use bigger font. So like no smaller than 22 size font, but like if you can get this down to like 15 words per slide, that's money. Way more pictures. So there you go. There's a lot there.
No, I think that's absolutely brilliant. I love going, you know, rewinding here, maybe, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, you know, skipping the spreadsheets. I've heard that before. And even I was looking at a deck yesterday and it was just like, wait, like this is a lot of numbers in, a lot of numbers out. Like you said, you know, maybe three numbers. This is what you put in. This is when you get your money back, and here's how much it'll be.
You know, and good. We're first. What's it called? Worst case, best case, and middle scenario. I think that's another one that a lot of people, especially in the real estate world, miss. Right? Here's what it looks like in the best. Here's the worst case. You know, we're kind of hoping it's somewhere in the middle. Those are beautiful slides, right? You could do that real clean.
You know, a lot of us don't want to put the worst case scenario out there. I mean, you know, if you're investing in a real estate syndication, worst case scenario is you lose all your money.
Yeah, but that's, if you could walk me through on how that doesn't happen, that's also really good.
Right. So you're saying don't be afraid just to go out there and put it out there. Say, hey, look, you're gonna you put in 50 or 100 grand with me in a deal, and your downside is losing all of that money.
Yeah.
But here's why we're gonna mitigate that.
Yeah. So I would say, like, instead of that, because that's the real reality with investing anyway. It's like, I would say, like, look, here's, I would say with the middle of the road in this case and the top line, like, hey, look, here's kind of like what we're thinking, you know, and here's a better scenario on what this could look like. Cause everybody knows that they have the chance of losing all their money.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause the last thing, you know, the last thing we want to do is paint everything in a negative light.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of going middle of the road, because that's the other thing I see too, is that, you know, just these outsized returns that you also just go, wait, like that's if everything tees up perfectly. Like maybe we dial this back and, you know, kind of show what an average return might look like if this doesn't go, you know, 100% as you hope.
And anytime someone's like, look, I'm going to make you a quadrillionaire. And you're like, sure you are. I'm done listening to you. Like, you know, like, but you're like, look, I could get you, like, you know, with what we have set up, we might get a 2.5 return, right? Or, you know, it might be 10% or whatever, you know, it's just like, oh, okay. I see that.
And I'll ask you this one last question before we jump into the final four, but do you see your group investing in things that maybe just aren't that sexy and don't have that, like, enormous, you know, upside potential, but they're more workhorse ideas?
Oh yeah. So we see a lot of that actually, because what ends up happening is somebody who has industry knowledge knows something better than anybody else, right? So typically what they'll do is they'll start off with alcohol product A or service A, and then they build that. And then all of a sudden, now that they have that foothold in the industry, they're able to expand around it, you know? So they'll invest in something that's a little bit more workhorse initially sometimes. And then now that they have leverage, they can go and leverage A, the investors that they have, so they can raise more capital. They've built a team that knows exactly where to go next. And so it makes a lot of sense to go that way.
Right, right. That's fascinating. Tim, this has been awesome. Let's jump into the final four here. This is the first question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Yeah, start raising money early, right? Start building that network early. You never want to be on the downhill. If you're on the downhill, like you're running out of money or you're running out of time, I mean, I know you run out of time on real estate deals all the time, but build early and then just keep talking to people. And if you're selling every time you're talking to people, stop doing that.
I like that. I like that. What is one way you are staying on top of your game?
I'm just in this world. I do it every day. I do it myself. I have a couple companies that I'm working on. So, you know, I practice what I preach.
Right, right. That's awesome. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
By teaching people. I think this is one of those worlds where you need to know more people than you know. And a lot of us don't have exposure. So we just Googled our way out of it and we end up sucking. So I try to coach everybody that I work with.
Right. That's great. Tim, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Best way to do it is timlcooley.com. You can email me through that or find me on LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn, whatever their things are, /TimLCooley.
That's awesome. Tim, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.